Okay, thank you, Perry. My name is Lucas Hegg with Kansas State University, based out of Colby, Kansas, as an extension agronomist. Worked for Alan for 3 years at Tribune and started to get my hands into the data set on the study he presented on previously. So anyway, was grateful for that opportunity. Looking a little bit on fallow efficiency and some of the things, that study in its entirety, as Alan said, dates back to 1993, which gives us quite a database to start pulling some numbers out of. And so as we think about how do we take some of this data and move it into the realm of answering some of the questions get from dry land producers in the area. So why look at fallow efficiency and profile water assessment? And the things I'm going to present today are fairly simple in nature, just kind of some overviews of the data set that's there and some ways to answer some questions maybe. In general, I think we've maybe misunderstanding is not the right word, but maybe a lack of understanding sometimes among producers about fallow. And fallow gets a bad rap for being inefficient. And we know that's true because it is inefficient, but oftentimes it's the stored water that's necessary to improve the stability in our systems, and I think that was highlighted in some of the data in the previous talk showing the more intense systems and how it plays out from an economic standpoint. But we have a lot of questions in terms of, as we move, have producers wanting to look at more dynamic cropping systems or wanting to intensify. A key piece of that is how do we make an assessment of profile water? And the standard producer practice today is using a ball rod, and everyone talks about how many foot of profile do you have, and it's just basically how far could you shove a ball rod in the ground. We know there's a lot of issues with that type of measurement, and there's some producer intuition that goes along with that measurement, but how do we turn that into a number that we can plug into some of these yield prediction models that have been developed in the region? Some technology on the line looking at maybe TDR technology that will let us look at profile water. We've got commercial capacitance probes on the market currently targeted towards the irrigation industry, but we know they've got some real accuracy issues in terms of, they can give us some good relative values, but lots of data showing that in terms of absolute numbers, we have some real concerns with some of that technology on the market. All the above here are point measurements, and some of these are quite capital intensive. And so if you think about deploying probes over an entire farming operation, the cost involved in that. And so can we come up with a different way looking at some of these relationships with fallow efficiency and in-season precipitation? Maybe there's an opportunity there to do some real rough quote-unquote modeling to get a handle at this. We know that profile water planting can be a very useful piece of data. Alan and Lloyd's work looking at sorghum and wheat, Dr. Nielsen's work looking at corn, to a lesser extent in corn, but we know it still sets us kind of some bounds of opportunities based on how much water we have at planting. With a better idea of profile water planting, perhaps we can make better informed management decisions. Do we plant? Do we fallow? Do we go to corn? Do we go to sorghum? Do we think about adjusting some management factors as part of that? So just a few things, and this often goes hand-in-hand with a lot of questions we get from producers. Well, how much water is in the profile at the end of the crop season? And so taking a look at some of that, and can we use some of this other information to predict year-to-year variability in fallow efficiency? So this is out of a long-term study that Alan introduced. If we look at, this is a profile available water at wheat harvest, okay, and this is across rotations. This includes wheat fallow treatment as well as basically any treatment since 1994, anytime we harvested wheat. This is how much profile water was remaining at harvest. So fairly normal distribution, mean just slightly over 3 inches there. But it's interesting, and we have these years out here where we've got 6, 7, maybe even 8 inches of water in the profile. And so certainly we think about, well, what could have been the issues there? And we've got issues in the data such as freeze on wheat or cases where after the wheat has ceased to use water, we then get some precipitation that comes in after that which may affect our measurements. And we've got some years we're pretty much pulling that profile down to little or nothing, signifying that basically from physiological maturity to harvest, we've definitely not received any precipitation there. But in general, slightly over 3 inches of water left in the profile, probably not a bad rule of thumb to think about. If we look at profile water after corn harvest, slightly more water actually left after corn, 3.5 inches. But, you know, we think about, again, when is harvest coming and when do we pick up some precipitation in there? A little narrower on the spread of the distribution there. I didn't really know what to expect, I guess, beforehand, but I was a little bit surprised how close corn and sorghum were in terms of remaining water in the profile of harvest. Sorghum slightly less at 3.3 inches. And an important thing to bring up this is, as Alan mentioned, some years when we have crop failures in corn, essentially we're shortening that growing season. We're stopping water use earlier, and so some of these higher values in corn could be coming from those years when we've had crop failure and then catching some precipitation after that point. So slightly over 3 1/3 inches in sorghum typically at harvest, and so Our main crops and our rotations, again, were pretty consistent at seeing around that 3 inches left in the profile. If you was at the Dryland Symposium yesterday and heard Dr. Peterson talk about fallow efficiency, and he hit this point quite well, and I think this is the first time we plotted this out is certainly surprising to me, and we've used it in extension talks since, talking about fallow efficiency, and I think we tend to underestimate how much of our precipitation comes in small rainfall events. And if we think about evaporative losses and really why is fallow not efficient, well, this is really what's driving it here is the proportion of our precipitation that we're getting down here in these 10, 20, 30, 40 hundredths increments type precipitation events. If we think about, and so we can see this is during the fallow period, this is actually during the stubble period in a wheat sorghum fallow. So this is after wheat harvest, before sorghum planting. So from basically around July 1 up through about May 15. And so there, you know, if we think about that, and then at Tribune, our range, if we look at our average precipitation event at Tribune, during a fallow period, that it ranges between slightly above 20, basically 20 hundredths and 40 hundredths is our average precipitation event at Tribune. Following up on some of the sequences that Alan presented, if we look at the effect of cropping system on fallow accumulation and efficiency, we do see differences in accumulation here with wheat, sorghum, corn, fallow being towards the top group here, and wheat, corn, fallow at the bottom. When I reran this analysis, looking at 11 from the end year through up through 15, and this is looking at the fallow period from row crop harvest to wheat planting, so that's why we've got 15 in here. We've seeded the 15 wheat crop. But, you know, what's really driving this wheat, corn, fallow deal, and as we updated this analysis with some of the more recent years where we'd had more abrupt crop failures in corn, we've got less residue out there in the corn plots, and so therefore we're negatively affecting our fallow efficiency. We see that statistically show up in the accumulation, not so much in the efficiency from a statistical standpoint. There's a lot of noise in that data, but I think the numeric trend certainly goes along with what we believe to be happening out there, and the accumulation figures would show that as well. I didn't plot all the raw data points here, but if we just look at, start going through some regression approaches, trying to pick different pieces of this out. This happens to come out of the long term, so this would be 1994 through current reduced till wheat fallow study at Tribune. If we look at just the impact of residue, and this is stubble, I mean, this is measured at wheat harvest time on fallow efficiency. Not the greatest R squared in the world, but, and this is a range of, this is the range of residue values we've seen at Tribune in that treatment has been from as low as 500 pounds to the acre on up to about 11,000 pounds per acre. So quite a range in situations there. And if we look at that factor alone, regressed on fallow efficiency, that gets us, you know, from the low values we do see in that 17% range on up pushing, we can do as well as 30% in a wheat fallow scenario. Taking another step of that, we combine the residue piece of that along with the average size of precipitation, some regression attempts on that, looking at fallow accumulation, and so we got precipitation obviously as an input into that, the average size of event, and then residue per 1,000 pounds. We can get a pretty decent R squared out of that. No surprise here. Basically, we're saying on fallow precipitation for every 1/100th that we can increase our average precipitation event size. So on typically our average during this fallow period is around 2,900ths. In the long fallow of wheat fallow. So if we can move that from 29 in a year when we have an average event size of 30 hundredths as opposed to 29 hundredths, we'll move our fallow efficiency up by almost a third of a percent just by having slightly larger precipitation events. Excuse me, I misspoke there. Fallow precipitation, so that's our base case of our efficiency, our average event here. We can move up for every 10th, we can move it up 0.29% for every 1/100th increase in average precipitation. Residue for every 1,000 pounds in residue, we can tack on basically another not quite a percent of fallow efficiency there. If we look at accumulation, if we go down fallow efficiency, some of the same things. We get residue as a linear effect, and then actually on the efficiency piece, we get average event size by residue interaction that comes in as highly significant. And so, in other words, we can compensate for having smaller precipitation events by having more residue out there on the ground. Okay, because we're saving more of that through the evaporation process. So in years when we've got more surface residue, the smaller precipitation events don't hurt us near as bad from an efficiency standpoint. So next steps with this, we think about how try moving this into a useful realm. From a producer standpoint, it's really about can we develop some basic regressions and turn this into a tool, something as simple as an Excel tool, where someone who has on-farm precipitation data can make some assumptions and figure out what their fallow accumulation might have been. We actually have a rather progressive producer in northwest Kansas who's doing this, and they're using long-term fallow efficiency values from Tribune and Akron and North Platte, and they're taking their on-farm precip data and making their own estimates of what they think their accumulation was. So maybe we can boil this down and refine it into something a little more detailed. Maybe there's an opportunity there. Certainly we're talking about a situation in with evaporation. Can we use a tool like Hydrus or Itwin-Bowell to get at that evaporation component of it, combine that with our weather station data, and be able to make some estimates that way in terms of stored soil water? So anyways, we're just kind of digging into this and thinking about how can we use this for use in extension activities and working with producers to make better decisions about soil water and understand fallow efficiency and its drivers as well. So again, in this data, I looked after the 2015 wheat planting. The soil water database for this study is approaching 45,000 entries. And work like that doesn't happen with dedicated technicians reading the tubes and taking the samples. And so we acknowledge them. And this work was partially supported by the Ogallala Aquifer Program. So any questions or comments? I'm certainly interested in any comments about what might be the right way to proceed with some of this.
I was quite impressed with your long-term data there. The thing that kind of surprised me was how close it was to the 3.5 or 3.3 inches. I really would have anticipated a greater spread. I was really surprised how it grouped right there around 3.5.
Yeah, I was really surprised as well, Dr. Stewart, and I think probably the obvious next step is to look at long-term where in the profile is that water at. Is it water we're not capturing down in the bottom of that profile? Something I think we need to look at. It brings up another challenge in this study and a lot of studies, and that is, and it goes back to the bigger deals, is how do we get good plant unavailable water figures too? and what do we use as that lower limit, and that could be driving some of what we see in here too. But appreciate the comment.
So, is this on? I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but I published a paper in 2010 that was doing what you were proposing to do here, at least for the, if it was a wheat fallow system. And we did the same kind of thing where we were looking at every possible meteorological parameter that we could think of that would be controlling this storage efficiency, precipitation storage efficiency. And you can come up with some models, but they're goofy. They're just crazy about what parameters controlling this. And we finally, at the end, came up with a simple model that a farmer could use. And it's, I hesitate to tell you, but you could read it in the journal. Anyway, but the parameters are whether it was a tilled or a no-till, or a conventional tilled or a no-till system. That was one of the parameters. It's just yes or no, and it affects it by 15% storage efficiency. Or it was the fraction of precipitation events that fell in the 2/10 to 6/10 range or greater than an inch of rain. And those three parameters would tell you the storage efficiency fairly accurately over that 14-month fallow period.
Yes. No, I appreciate the comments. That's actually kind of what got us looking at part of this, and what we'd like to do. Where most of our interest is from a producer standpoint is in that phase following wheat harvest to row crop planting, and so that's where we'd like to take those same concepts and try and dial in on that time frame.
Yeah, I guess I think what you're talking about doing is really valuable, because these guys don't want to go out even with a ball probe to do anything. So if there's a way to calculate it and get kind of close to what available water is at planting of that crop, that's a great thing.
I appreciate the comment.
I'm curious, have you also looked at the water availability at planting rather than after the crop harvest, and does that make any difference? Or?
So the question is, we looked at the impacts of plant available water at planting. So Alan has published some work. I imagine this data is part of that paper, I think, looking at the impacts of plant available water at planting on sorghum and wheat yields. And that's really kind of the other side of this. We've got some rather progressive producers that feel comfortable with that approach if they know what their starting soil moisture is.
Better cut it off there. We're a little over time. Let's give Lucas a hand.